You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Podcast, episode 32. I'm Chris Webster.
And I'm April Kemp Whitaker. On today's show, we're going to talk about field schools. They aren't just for students.
Let's dig a little deeper. All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. Welcome, April. Haven't talked to you in a while, it feels like.
I know, it's been a crazy end of the semester, slash end of the year.
I know, I've had to slot in a few, at least one solo episode, and then the last episode I recorded with Paul Zimmerman on the while sitting on the mall, the National Mall, right in front of the Museum of Natural History, and I figured it was a good podcast episode for this show, even though Paul's on the Archaeotech podcast with me. It seemed like it was more appropriate for this, so it's actually worked out since we hadn't had time to record to slot it in here, so hopefully people heard that. But today, we're going to talk about field schools, and this podcast is designed for a wider audience than just archaeologists, of course. So we're going to talk about field schools from a standpoint of maybe archaeology students at first, just to kind of frame what we're talking about here. But then we're going to get into some ways that you can go to a field school if you just want to go take a vacation, have some fun, and do some archaeology. And there's places to... There's ways that we'll talk about that you can actually do that that's a slightly shorter term, because most of your field school is a little longer than you could probably take a vacation for. However, we'll get into all of that later on. So let's first define what is a field school. April, how would you define a field school? So if somebody just didn't know what the heck you were talking about.
You know, I think in a lot of ways the name field school kind of sums it up pretty well. It's a school that happens in the field. So... It's a lot like an apprenticeship in a weird way, mm-hmm. where you're receiving hands-on training. So you're volunteering your labor, paying for the opportunity to go to an archaeological site and be taught everything you would need to know to leave and go work professionally at some level, mm-hmm. or move on through your education and become an archaeologist. Or if you're just interested in archaeology, you know, it's a hands-on experience. You're going out there, you're actually doing excavation, doing survey, doing analysis, learning all of the different methods and processes of what happens. So it's school, but it's happening outside and in a field setting. How would you define it? Let's get your definition too and see how we overlap because, you know, different people go through different field schools and have super different experiences and ideas about what it is.
That's true. And I'm in cultural resource management archaeology. So some people will call that like professional archaeology in the United States, although I think that implies that academics aren't professionals, which is completely untrue. But anyway, there's no teaching involved, and it's more of a you need these basic skills. I think you explained it really well, actually, as it's kind of like a trade school for whatever you're learning to do. It's as though you went to med school or something, and you were to do your I don't know the whole progression they do, but like your internships and things like that, like you said, except very, very much shorter. For us, for CRM archaeologists, we go to a field school, and right now, I mean, really, if you go to apply for a job, they say you need a degree in archaeology, a related field, and a field school. And the problem is that field school can really be anything. Like, for example, I did my field school in Africa, and I think we'll talk about that a little later, but it had nothing to do with CRM archaeology in the United States. And I learned virtually nothing that helped me with CRM archaeology in the United States. But the system isn't robust enough to like pull that kind of detail out right now. So I think... To me, a field school in this context, especially as an employer, if I was to look at a new employee, I would actually ask them, where did they go to their field school? If they went to their field school in Belize and they're green in the field, they're brand new, and I have somebody else that applied and they went to field school in Western Nevada doing survey and the kind of things that I expect them to do on the job, all other things being equal, I'm probably going to take that person that went to field school in Western Nevada just because they're going to have actionable skills that... You know, so I have to do less training, basically. So I think it's basically my definition is learning the skills that you need for the job that you want, which is why you really have to think about the field school that you want to go to. So Or you can just go for fun, which we'll talk about later. But first, I want to talk about, as we're doing this, because that just made me think, having this discussion right now, about our first field school experiences. Now, April, you help teach a field school every year now, but you must have gone to a field school first. You're a little bit different situation because you kind of grew up in field schools.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say that. So I went on my first field school when I was a year old. In fact, I learned how to walk on field school. They dangled a cookie and said, come get the cookie. And I got up and walked to get the cookie, which is still a very good motivator for me. If you offer me cookies, I will do almost anything.
Nice.
So I sort of grew up around them and started, I would say I went on a field school for the first time in high school, and it was the field school I grew up going to, but I actually came out to the field every single day and did all of the things that the college students were doing instead of going to day camp. Or daycare and doing other things.
Nice.
So that was sort of the first name, was my freshman year of high school, going to a real field school. And that was in the Arizona area. And then I did another one, like a week-long thing in Mexico, and another one in Belize. And then right after I finished college, I kind of pseudo-crew chiefed for the first time for my parents and help them run survey. So I've sort of always been doing field schools, but never really been on a field school in many ways.
Right.
Which is kind of, I always think of this as a really interesting position because most archaeologists have these very strong, very distinct memories of their field school. It's an important formative moment, I think, for archaeologists. And so in weird ways, I've done them over and over, but I've never really had that experience of going off and being on a field school. So it's a little bit, you know, I feel a little bit of imposter syndrome here as I talk about field schools.
Well, but not really though, because you're like an expert on field schools. So you're the perfect person to have on this show to talk about field schools, you know, in general.
I've been on field schools in multiple countries, and I've been on ones done by a lot of different people, which I think is something. That's actually one of the things I think you realize when you've been on a few field schools and been involved in them, teaching them, go visiting them, is how different every single project director's approach is to a field school, what a field school should be like, sort of the lived experience of it, what the research and skills that are going to be taught in that field school are, and how much they prioritize those over sort of using field school to get their research accomplished.
Okay.
So, yeah. So what was your, how does your field school experience fit into that sort of, because you also had a slightly atypical field school experience too.
I did. My experience was atypical. However, the fact that I've only been to one field school in a foreign country in my entire life is more typical of most people in this field, I feel like. You know, because that's the thing. When you're in college, your undergrad more likely, You always hear about field schools, and even if you don't know, you don't planning on going into CRM archaeology, which requires a field school. I didn't know anything about CRM archaeology when I went to mine. I had no intention of going into CRM, nothing at all. But when you're in college, you hear about field schools because one of the things archaeology professors do is they have research that they do over the summer, and they typically run a field school when they get to a certain point in their lives, right? So you always hear about these field schools that you can go on, and when you start hearing about those ones run by your professors, hopefully you start hearing about other ones. You start realizing that, hey, I don't have to go to, this is my thought process, and I love my professor who is running this school, and they did it every year out of the University of North Dakota, but they went to like middle of North Dakota for this field school every year to work on this site that was a couple hundred years old. And I was like, listen, I am reading about the Leakeys and paleoanthropology. I don't need a field school that's 200 years old. Nowadays, I would love to go on there and go see what they were digging up. But back when I was in my undergrad, I'm like, I don't think so. I'm not paying $4,000 for the, you know, to go to Central North Dakota. It's bad enough that I'm in North Dakota at all. And now I'm not going to Central North Dakota for like 6 weeks to do this field school. Looking back on it, it would have been better for my career had I done that, because I'd have learned more skills right off the bat that would have helped me, you know, move through my career as a shovel bum. But no, I wanted to do paleoanthropology, so I sought out. I just started looking up on the internet, you know, paleoanthropology field schools and trying to figure out, you know, early human stuff. Where could I go? I knew I had to go to Africa, but I wasn't sure where and how to get there. And two things that I found, one was, this is just searching on Google, basically. One was the field school that's run by, what is it called? It's out of Kenya, and it's run by one of the granddaughter of Louis Leakey, the daughter of Richard Leakey, Louise Leakey. It's run by her, I believe, and it's right out of Kenya, the Lake Turkana area. And yeah, that's been a long running school, but you have to be like a top notch grad student from a top notch school to get into that field school right now. Everybody wants to go there because it's the hotspot of human origins. They've got the family name. They've got everything going for them, and it's where everybody wants to go. So needless to say, an undergrad from the University of North Dakota did not get into that field school. I don't even think I applied. So, but what I did find is something I want to talk about a little later in the podcast in more detail, was an Earthwatch field school. And basically, they take just about anyone. You don't have to be in school. Like, we'll talk about that later too. But you pay a fee, just like you do most field schools. This was 3 weeks long. We excavated a trench, and we did some survey, actually. But we excavated a trench in Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania that was down at the lowest levels of the gorge. And the gorge's base levels at 2.01 million years old. That's what the basalt layer is labeled, is dated to at the bottom. And then the top basalt layer that we were digging under between there was 1.86 or 7 million years old. So between there, that's where our dates were.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. We stayed in the camp built by the Leakey family when they first started coming to Olduvai Gorge. The son of the cook that cooked for Mary Leakey for a long time was our cook, because he comes out there every year for whoever's going out there and cooks for him. And it was just a really fun, really cool experience. It was 3 weeks long. And again, I learned some things about archaeology on that. I learned how to use a Munsell for the first time for color and for, you know, colors on soils and things. And we did some field survey but it was an African field school with volunteers. So I didn't actually do any digging because the local Africans that they brought in were actually doing the digging, and we were there doing the screening and some of the other stuff, just like you would imagine an African field school would be, even though it wasn't 1850. It felt like it. But yeah, that was my experience. So it was really fun. It was really fulfilling. And I'm glad I did it. But had I known I was going to be a professional archaeologist later on, I probably should have chosen something else, quite frankly.
Well, and you know, this is one of the fun things about field school. So in undergrad, my best friend also wanted to be an archaeologist, and she went on her dream field school to Pompeii because she did classical things. And that actually helped her figure out that she did not want to be an archaeologist because, you know, it was amazing. It was this amazing experience that she adored and was in many ways very life-changing, and she would never say no to, as I think most people interested in archaeology would never say no to a chance to dig in Pompeii. but she realized that what she liked was the act of discovery through excavation, and she hated all of the mundane parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's part of field school is, in some ways, it's a life experience and an exciting moment and an adventure. A lot like study abroad, I think. It's archaeological study abroad or study in country. But it's that same idea. But at the same time, it's letting you explore whether you think the things about archaeology that you think are true really are.
Yeah. Well, and I have heard people say that before, too. And I actually used to really agree with that, but I'm sort of changing my tune on that in the last not too long. Yeah. Well, the reason is, going back to my field, CRM archaeology, if you ask 100 people on 100 different days what they think about CRM archaeology, you'll get 100 different answers. And the reason is, you know, when I was really shovel bumming, I was a field technician. My wife and I were traveling across the country doing different work. We worked in 17 different states in 1 year. And because we were doing short projects, we were just bouncing from, you know, company to company. And that's how you do it. That's part of the job. And if I think back on those, if I gauged my entire career on some of those jobs that were miserable, whether it was the actual environment or the people or the company we were working for, I mean, I'd have killed myself over and over again just because it was horrific. And yet some of those projects were really amazing. And sometimes it was amazing because the people you're working with are awesome. Sometimes it's amazing because of the archaeology and what you're finding. And sometimes it's amazing for completely different reasons that you didn't even suspect. And I think it's the same thing with a field school. I've heard people before say, well, I went on this field school, I didn't like it, and for whatever reason they didn't like it, they decided to get out of archaeology entirely, change their major, do whatever they're doing, and do something else. But maybe it was the process of archaeology. Maybe it was just a bad teacher. Maybe it was just an environment, a type of field school they didn't like. I mean, there's other things you can do. So I would just caution people. That's my thing.
No, you're right. I think that's actually an excellent caution, because there is a component to it where it's about the people you're on it with. Because mm-hmm. every field school that I've ever been involved with, the composition of the group of students changes completely. How, yeah. you know, one field school, everyone's super studious and no one socializes in the evening. And the next one, every evening people are out playing cards, playing basketball, you know, and they're very social. And so that does really change. But I think at the same time, if you discover that you absolutely hate being hot and dusty, you know, it's what matter the core pieces of archaeology. Like, I actually really dislike having dirt on my hands.
Oh, my.
Right. So this That's, is an intrinsic kind of a problem. Flaw in myself as an archaeologist, and maybe why I am drawn to survey and lab analysis.
Nice.
But, you know, I've obviously gotten over this and moved forward with my career as an archaeologist. But if you discover that this is an insurmountable issue for you, okay, that's not the field experience necessarily. It's sort of the part of archaeology that is unchanging regardless of the project or the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are horribly bored walking for hours in a straight line, regardless of the, you know, fabulous podcast that you're currently listening to. Or you just discover, you know, I've worked with people who couldn't walk in a straight line.
Right. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
No matter how hard you tried to teach them.
Oh,
or,
my God.
You know, so some people, you know, it's like any job. I would be a terrible surgeon, and I accept this just because of my inability to remember detailed facts, like body parts and things like that. So no one would want me operating on them.
Right.
And so archaeology is like that. Some people have an innate talent for it. Some people learn the skills. And some people, it's just not the mm-hmm. right career choice. So field school to me is when you shake that out, so figure it out. So
yes. And I think that reminded me of a good way to start the second segment where we'll talk about what's common to all field schools, but before you decide to choose a field school, what's something you may encounter in all field schools, if anything? And I think we can come up with a few things, and we'll do that right after the break. In the meantime, listen to this. It'd be the last one of 2017 for this podcast, but you're going to keep hearing them. So it's going to be a promo for our membership site. Check that out. If you're listening to this on the day that this show releases, which is December 30th, you have also, I think, just 2 days, because the December 31st at midnight on Pacific time, our code HOLIDAY15 expires for our shop, so you can get a coffee mug and some stickers. That's not what the promo's for. It's for the member site, but I don't have a promo for the coffee mug and stickers, so I thought I'd mention it. So do that, and we'll be back in just a minute with segment two.
This network is supported by our listeners. You can become a supporting member by going to arcpodnet.com/members and signing up. As a supporting member, you have access to high-quality downloads of each show and a discount at our future online store and access to show hosts on a members-only Slack team. For professional members, we'll have training shows and other special content offered throughout the year. Once again, go to arcpodnet.com/members to support the network and get some great extras and swag in the process. That's arcpodnet.com/members.
Okay, we are back with the Archaeology Show, episode 32, and we're talking about field schools. And I thought of a question while April was talking about her dirt phobia at the in the last segment about what are some common things to all field schools. And I think we can safely say getting dirt on your hands is probably common to all field schools. I mean, I don't know of a single archaeology field school where you wouldn't actually encounter dirt in some shape or form. Can you think of one, April, where you wouldn't encounter dirt in a field school?
You know, even you're just always going to be surrounded by dirt, and eventually you have to accept that in life. So no, I can't think of one, and you should be surrounded by dirt. And if you're not,
that's right,
there's something going wrong in your field school.
I think maybe an underwater archaeology field school where may have gloves and things on. Yeah. So maybe that's one.
You and I don't have great experiences. We don't really know much about the underwater side. So this is a whole other realm that does have its own field school. So if someone's really interested in that, there are field schools in underwater archaeology. We just probably won't cover them much because we go on them.
Yeah, you've really got to be devoted to underwater archaeology to want to do it, because there's not very many jobs either. I mean, you just look at the access. You know, you're looking at coastal things, and there's way less coastline than there is interior. So just in sheer volume, there's less. However, that being said, there's probably, I'm just going to pull this, you know, right off the top of my head here, I'd be willing to bet if you are interested in underwater that there's going to be more call for it as sea levels rise and things start getting either submerged or more destroyed. If there's a site that wasn't able to be handled, because they're talking about sites getting covered by sea level rise and what's going to look like in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and how we're going to have to do some rapid, you know, pre-disaster archaeology on some of this stuff, especially on like the east coast of the United States where it's flatter and just a little bit of sea level rise will cover a lot of land. But if we don't get to it in time, there may be some underwater archaeology involved to actually go handle those sites that have been inundated already. So I don't know if that's true or not, but now might be the best time to get into that. So, yeah, who knows? I have no idea. But I think one other commonality to all field schools might be being uncomfortable, because that seems to be a hallmark of archaeology in some cases, especially summertime archaeology, is you're hot, you're dusty, you're either humid, maybe you're sweaty, but there's always something making you uncomfortable. Bugs, if your weather's perfect, then you probably have bugs. I mean, something is always going to make you uncomfortable. And I think that's just because you're outside, probably, you know, in a situation you're unfamiliar with, in an area you're unfamiliar with, and you're probably not used to being outside for 4 to 6 weeks. We don't all have it cushy like the folks at Amache with their nice little building to sleep in every night. But, and your cook, you have a cook too, don't you?
We do. She's amazing because she's a home economics
major. I know.
And she's truly a phenomenal woman. Keeps us really well fed. So,
nice.
No, I think you're right. There is an element of discomfort. And I think part of that also comes because a universal component of most field schools, there's a few exceptions to this, is you are living with a group of strangers too. Mm-hmm. So there's also this weird element of being an adult and spending basically all day, every day for a couple of weeks with this same small group of people. And it can be an amazing bonding experience. You know, people walk out of field school with friends that they are going to keep in touch with for life. But it can also be kind of a weird and uncomfortable experience. So, yeah, that's another kind of interesting element about field schools, is this sort of close contact with a bunch of people you've potentially never met before in your life.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, being able to put yourself in a situation where you're meeting new people, and not only are you meeting new people, but you're probably going to have very little, if not no, personal space, you know, other than maybe your tent if you have one, or, you know, your small, tiny area. And you're just going to have to get used to that. I mean, that's just going to be a common element of most field schools, where you're not going to have much personal time or space for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And if you do get some, cherish that and use it. But don't expect that you will get that. You're going to have to work pretty closely with people. So, All right, so let's move on here. We got some more thoughts and questions on our list here, and I just want to get this out of the way because people might be thinking, people aren't familiar with archaeology. When they think of archaeology, they probably think, like you said, Pompeii, Belize, you know, Rome, Africa, things like that. But where do field schools generally happen, April? I mean, I think they can happen just about anywhere, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I do a field school in southeastern Colorado, not the pretty part, the flat part. Although I think it is uniquely beautiful. I really like it. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are field schools all over the Midwest. There's almost anywhere there's archaeology and a university faculty or mm-hmm. an organization that wants to host and run a field school, you can find a field school, which I think mm-hmm. is one of the kind of amazing things is you don't have to travel very far. Wherever you're living, right. there's probably a field school, you know, within that state, which can be really nice. Yeah. You know, you can find field schools where you get to go home every weekend if that's something that is important to you or you need to go do. Or you can find field schools where you get to go away and you get to kind of escape for a month mm-hmm. Or more. So I think that's one of the best things about field schools is you really find one that meets your interests and needs. Which is kind of special. It's a really interesting. Yeah.
There's all kinds of different field schools are like people. They have all different qualities. And if you look hard enough, you'll find the one that fits what you're looking for. And we'll talk about a little more a little later about exactly what to expect in a field school and what you should be looking for. But part of this other question about where do they happen is when do they happen? So field schools generally happen in the May through, I guess, August timeframe for the most part. And that's really because it's tied to the, you know, to the university system. If your university is like in the United States here, most of the universities are September-ish to August, September timeframe to May, June timeframe, which professors are teaching and doing things. Mm-hmm. And so they have their field school over the summer when they're not doing classes. That's how your guys' is, right, April?
Yeah, there are a lot of... Some universities, though, are recognizing that summer field schools are expensive and they're hard for students to attend if they need to keep working or mm-hmm. are non-traditional students. And they are moving towards field schools that happen during the semester or during breaks, or some universities have these sort of winter terms or short terms, you know, where it's like a 2-week semester built in and they're moving to field schools during those time periods. So there's getting to be more flexibility in when these field schools occur just because, you know, it's hard for a lot of students not to work during the summer now and pay for field school instead. Mm-hmm. So there's a growing understanding of that aspect. And universities are trying to be more flexible and teach sort of field courses where you learn these skills. And they're sort of a field, it's like a modified field school.
Right. And then keep in mind that summer only happens in those months in the Northern Hemisphere. Yeah. The Southern Hemisphere has summer in our winter. So if you have a field school that takes place in a place where you need good weather and it's in the southern, like lower Southern Hemisphere, it might be more beneficial to you actually have that school over the winter break. And a lot of colleges have like a month long winter break, which is, you know, you take a few weeks of that and go have a field school. True, you might have some issues to deal with Christmas. In fact, I know a friend of mine, she went on, I don't know that it was a field school. It was more of a field reconnaissance kind of thing for a later field school. But this professor took like a handful of students to China over the winter break. I mean, they were there for Christmas, New Year's, everything. They were there for like 3 weeks and they took them to China and they were in, I don't know, some big city in China and then went out into the countryside for a while for part of this. I think it was doing like some pre-research, but it still counted kind of as a field school because of what they did. But those are kind of things you can look for that might be happening over the winter term. Or, yeah, it's really interesting thinking of, I didn't know, this is the first I've heard of schools trying to do it during the fall or during the semester, I guess, which totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're kind of getting to that. But I'll jump ahead. Field schools can be really expensive because part of what mm-hmm. you're paying for with the field school is the cost of, you know, housing you and feeding you, kind of some of the overhead costs of running these projects. And, you know, so sometimes they can be run cheaply and sometimes they can't. And so doing a field school can really get expensive. And, you know, as more and more, as university as a whole gets more expensive and school gets more mm-hmm. expensive, there's less money to spend on things like field schools. And I think it's becoming a right. problem for a lot of students. And, you know, everyone who wants to go into the field of archaeology is, how do you pay for this field experience that you need potentially to get into grad school or to get your first CRM job while also paying all the existing costs for school? And so more and more mm-hmm. field schools are trying to find ways to be flexible for students. But when you look at the price for field schools and you go, oh, that's why, you know, it's really, you're building in all of this overhead into it, that, you know, it's paying for your housing, your lodging, the equipment. So there's not universe. So people running field schools aren't trying to bilk you for your money, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Like, you know, there's a reason this cost exists, but it can look really intimidating just when you're shopping around.
Yeah, especially field schools as far as cost goes. It's I mean, they have a university system looking over them as far as every penny they're spending. And I mean, I don't know if they're always going in the hole or not, but every single penny that gets spent on that field school is getting spent on that field school. Like nobody's driving, you know, Teslas home from that field school. They're right. Yeah. And most of the time it's just not enough. I mean, most of the time your field school is just running on, you know, they probably ask like a lot of budgetary things. You probably ask for a certain amount of money through grants and things, and then hope you get a certain number of students on top of that. But it probably never pays for everything you want to do. And you have to work within the budget that you're given. So,
yep, exactly.
All right. So before we dive deeper into costs and things, I want to talk about what people should look for. And I think here's where you're uniquely suited to talk about this, April, because you have been to so many field schools. So what are the kind of things that, if you're looking for a field school, what are the kind of things you think people should look for as far as what the field school offers? What are some of the things you can look for as bullet points that a field school might offer that you'd be interested in learning?
Yeah. So I have sort of a basic checklist in my head. And obviously it will vary for people depending on what your future plans are. You know, is this just something you've always dreamed of doing and you want a really interesting, exciting experience? Or are you kind of prepping yourself to enter the field? But regardless, I think you need to look at the range of skills. So at the very minimum, your field school should teach you excavation skills, and it should teach you lab skills. So most field schools have some kind of, you know, afternoon or evening lab component where they teach you what happens after things are excavated. You know, and it's often just recording the artifacts, doing some basic analysis, and then they most field schools have an excavation component, and they're teaching you how to handle the equipment, you know, how to use survey equipment, how to lay out an excavation pit, how to collect soil samples, things like that. So you should get as big a range of excavation skills. Hopefully you're getting a chance to survey also, but I think that's a lot less common. And I think for me, you should look for a field school that tries to involve you, the student, in sort of all as many of the steps and processes that they can. So one thing, you know, like the field school you went on, Chris, was really a great experience and really interesting, but you were sort of an observer on a lot of things rather than a participant. So a field school, a really good field school, makes you a participant and explains, okay, we're going to have you collect this sample this way. This is why we're collecting the sample and how it feeds into our overall research objectives. This is why you collect it in this way, and kind of explaining some of the science behind these things. Because it helps you as you move forward when, you know, you understand the logic behind the decision-making process for these things, which then when you're working on your own in the field, you can kind of say, okay, well, here is why you do these things. Not just be able to perform a task, but understand why the task is performed. So sort of get a range of skills. It should be reputable. So, you know, do a little background research. It may sound like the world's coolest, most fascinating field school in this amazing exotic location. But just double check, you know, make sure it's being run through an accredited school if you want credit for it. Make sure that it's safe. You know, is this a location that you want to be traveling to? You know, there, Field schools, like we talked about, are weird because you live in close contact with people. You're in foreign countries. So you want to make sure that you're going to be comfortable with the people you are going to be with, and that, you know, if something goes wrong, you can talk to the people, the director, that the director is going to be there. So just, you know, shop around, do some research. There are lots of forums and places where you can talk to people. You can ask if it's a university-run field school. You can always talk to students who are on the field school the year before and just see what their experience was. Think of it as a big consumer purchase. Like, you wouldn't buy a new laptop off Amazon without looking at the reviews. So try to find some reviews for your field school. And that will also tell you if it's the experience that you want to have, is what you're going to get. So,
right. It's almost like being able to listen to like a series style podcast about a field school would be a good thing to get people. Man, if only something like that existed, that'd be great. Anyway.
This is a side brainchild of Chris's that he dreams about doing.
I want to add something to that, because what I tell people too, especially I get emails and things from that relatively frequently about people in their undergrad wanting to get into CRM or something. They found a podcast or whatever, and they ask questions, say, what kind of field school should I go to? And I always tell them the first thing, I was like, listen, if you plan on going into archaeology as a career, then find a field school that will help you do that. That'll beef up your resume. So if you're looking, if you're going to work in Nevada and you're going to do a lot of field survey and not a lot of excavation, then maybe find a school in the Great Basin or West Coast, Western area of the United States, that will actually help you do that and understand what you have to do. If you're going to go somewhere that is heavy on, you know, one type of thing or another that you really want to learn and study, then do that. But then the other question you have to ask yourself, especially for people listening to this show, is, am I going to field school because I just want a really cool, fun experience? There's those out there too. And maybe the actual nuts and bolts of what they're going to teach you is less important than the location. Like, I mean, I, even though I didn't learn a lot to help my career in Africa, that's the only time I've ever been to Africa. And I got to dig and live in the same place that the Leakey family lived, and dig in the same places and see the type sites for some pretty amazing finds. And I will never, ever regret that experience. I mean, it was just an amazing thing to do. Even though it didn't really help me in my career, I still became an archaeologist, so it didn't hurt me, I guess. But it didn't give me any sort of leg up or anything. When I got to my first job, like right after that, I pretty much had to look around because I didn't know how to use a screen, like the typical standing screens that we use. I didn't know how to use one. And I got partnered up with somebody on this ongoing excavation. And I just basically stood around chatting with this guy, kind of making like I knew what I was doing, while other people went to the back dirt pile so I could learn from them and watch how they lifted up the screen and how they used it, because I didn't know how. So, and then we're digging these like flat shovels and these 5-centimeter levels. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so terrible at this. So,
well, and you know what? That's actually something that I have also learned, is no matter what you learn on your field school, the next time you do a different project, it's not going to be what you should have learned, because Everybody in archaeology does things a little bit different. So I always used a pointy trowel, and then I discovered that apparently, you know, historic archaeologists prefer flat, like square nose trowels. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. But where I come from, the pointy trowel is king. So that's one thing to consider, is no matter what you learn, you should be getting a basic set of skills and knowledges, but you're going to have to be flexible and you're going to learn new things on the very next project you go to. And actually, off of your idea of what kind of field school you want, you know, is it sort of something just for fun? Is it really professional training? You can look for field schools. Some field schools do field trips, and they're built into the curriculum. A lot of field schools will publish a syllabus, and you can look at that and say, oh, hey, you know, they're doing all of these really interesting field trips on the weekends, or, you know, the weekends, they just sort of let us free and it's set in the middle of nowhere. What am I supposed to do with myself? you can figure out a lot of those pieces. You know, I think field trips are really fun and they can be really exciting. But at the same time, sometimes escaping and having time to yourself can be really great. No, you're right. It really, it's interesting, the kind of range of options.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's take our final break. And when we come back, we'll talk about who can go to a field school, what it's going to cost, and what some of your options are. But we'll do that in the last segment. Back in a second.
All these things we make no apology for the study of archaeology. But we don't do dinosaurs.
Did aliens build Stonehenge? Did the Easter Island statues walk? Did the Vikings colonize Midwest America? What does mainstream archaeology have to say about all of this? Listen to the Archaeological Fantasies podcast and learn about popular archaeological mysteries. Hoax or fact? Learn to tell the difference with Dr. Kenneth Fader and co-host Sarah of the Archie Fantasies blog. Check out the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/Archie Fantasies and get ready to think critically. Let's get back to the show.
Funny beady blokes, you will see, are a staple of archaeology.
All right, we're back with the Archaeology Show, episode 32, and we're talking all about field schools. So we've mentioned in the first two segments what types of field schools there are, what you can expect to learn at a field school, whether or not a dirt phobia will help you out at a field school, and if you should or should not have one. And then, so now that you've heard all that and you're wondering, wow, can I go to a field school? The answer to that question is basically yes, and it doesn't really matter who you are. There might be some qualifications, like if you have some sort of disability or something like that. There might be some schools, field schools, you simply just can't go on because they might require some access or something that's just not there. Especially in foreign countries, they may not have the rules and laws and regulations that apply to that. That being said, some of them may allow you to do other things. You might just not be able to go on the field survey if you're in like a wheelchair or something, but you might be able to work in the lab if they have one on site, or you might be able to do some other things, but you just have to find out. So April, you have been to a lot of field schools, as you said. Is there any limitations on who can go to a field school that you've seen in general?
You know, I think it depends on each individual field school. Like we've been saying, I think in the end, everybody who's interested in a field school can find a field school for them. But, mm-hmm. you know, some field schools that are run through universities belong to that university, and you have to be a student at that school. Some are run by university, and you have to be a student at some school.
Mm-hmm.
Some are just sort of open projects that people can pay to go on. So there's a whole range. And I think it's one of those things, too, where sometimes if – like the field school that I work on is about Japanese internment, Japanese American internment. And we want to engage with people, especially people who had family members at the site we work at or were at the site we work at themselves, because that's, for us, that's part of understanding the archaeology of that site. And so if we're contacted by people who are interested in coming out, maybe volunteering for a week, who have a connection to the site, you know, we're really open to that. So mm-hmm. it really will vary by the field project, who's running it. And, you know, it never hurts if there's a field school you think you're interested in and you're not a student, or you're not sure you have a limitation, or you're just not sure it's right for you. It never hurts to reach out to the director, whoever's running it. Just send them an email mm-hmm. and say, hi, you know, I'm really interested in this. Here are my questions. Here are potential concerns. And hopefully they'll address them and answer it and respond to you, because, you know, most people who run field schools are passionate about what they're doing and want to get good students and want those students to succeed in those field schools, or good participants if you're not a student. You know, one of the things we always say is, you know, as someone who runs a field school, we're looking for people that are interested in the work, excited about the work, and that we want to live with for a couple of weeks, because the people running the field schools are there too. So, you know, if you have questions, contact people. I mean, that's a great way to find out more. But I think anyone can find a field school for them. I really mm-hmm. think that.
And I think one benefit to being a student as we move into cost here is that, you know, field schools are not in general incredibly cheap. And we'll talk about that right now. But one of the benefits to being a student at a university, if you're going to a field school, is that you can often get student loans or tie that into your existing student loans to pay for that field school. You know, if incurring even more debt is something that you're interested in, and if you're a student, then the answer to that question is yes. But Anyway, so cost for a field school. I'll talk about my Earthwatch experience first, because that's the only one I have experience with. We can get that out of the way right away. But I had all the costs. There were no school. I couldn't get student loans for it because it was, while it was affiliated with the University of Dar es Salaam, I could have gotten credit from that university if I had basically applied for it. And I don't know, there was a weird thing going on where I could have gotten credit from there. But I found out that my university that I was going to didn't care if I had credit from that university. They like wouldn't take it. I actually transferred into that university from another school anyway. So I think I'd maxed out the number of credits I could transfer in regardless from another institution. So maybe that was a unique case for me. So I didn't concern myself with actually getting university credit for that that school. That being said, it still cost me around $6,000 for that 3 weeks. And that included a plane ticket from North Dakota, basically, to Nairobi, Kenya, and then a bus from Nairobi down into Tanzania, and all the transportation. The transportation actually from Nairobi, I think, was covered by the cost of the field school. And then I had to get the plane ticket, you know, to and from there, which was a pain. But, and a lot of flying. I mean, a ton of flying. It was, I mean, Africa's not very close to us. So here in the United States. So it was an experience. But, and then the field school itself was somewhere around, I guess, $3,000 to $4,000. So it was about $2,000 or so for the plane tickets. And then the field school itself was somewhere around $4,000 or so, $4,000 or $5,000. It was one of the more expensive ones they offer because it's Africa. Just the distance and the things you're doing. It's really weird to say that though, because once we were there, it actually seemed pretty cheap. You know, I mean, we had a cook on site. We did do some field trips, but they were with the vehicles that we had there. We went out to the Serengeti one day, and we went to this Maasai market one day, which was really cool. And we went to a couple other places. But for the most part, we were just there working, sleeping in our own tents that we brought right there on the Serengeti, on the edges of the Serengeti. And I don't know actually why it costs so much. I'm not sure what the deal is there. With Earthwatch, the person who is running the field school will basically petition Earthwatch and say, this is what we need. This is what we're going to charge. Earthwatch makes a little money on that so they can keep their operation going. But they basically say, here's what we need. Here's what it's going to cost. And you bring us the people. And that's how they do it. So, but I think in general, and April, you can correct me on this because I haven't looked into the cost of field school in a long time. In general, you're going to get some credit for that field school, some college credit. And you're going to pay at least the per credit hour cost plus some, because the field school has its own operating expenses. So whatever the per credit cost is at your university, if it's a 6 credit field school, you're going to pay 6 times that per credit cost plus, I think, plus some extra. What in your experience, how does that jive with what you know, April?
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard, is that there's a certain amount of cost from the university that's sort of paying for credits, paying for some university overhead, because they're managing the funds, they're managing the insurance for the field school. And so there's sort of a little bit of that built into it. And then there's the cost for putting you up, paying for the equipment. Although most of the time field schools sort of have a built inventory, so that's pretty low cost, all built in. And I would say, you know, a good range for field schools right now is probably $3,000 to $5,000. Something that falls in that range, I wouldn't see as atypical. And that should be for a couple of weeks. You know, if it's 1 week and it's at cost.
That's crazy.
And most field schools, I would say, are probably 4 to 6 weeks is a pretty standard length of time. That's about how long it takes to get something done and to teach you guys, you know, to teach something and to learn the range of skills that are expected. So, you know, it's not cheap, but it's not too ridiculous. And most of the time that cost, though, doesn't include travel and transport to get yourself to the field school. So, you know, if you're flying to Tanzania or Transylvania, that's going to be a lot more than if you're flying to Tennessee.
Transylvania.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them there. A bunch of field schools there. That's one thing to consider. But most of the time, once you're at the field school, the costs that you're going to incur are sort of supplemental things, like, oh, I need to buy more shampoo. Oh, I really should have packed work gloves. let me go and grab a pair of those. So that lump sum covers a lot of the things. You know, I always kind of think about it as, how much do I spend in a month, you know, on sort of my daily living? and that's sort of rolled mm-hmm. into your field school costs. So
I've always seen it as around you get typically around, depending on how they work it out, you get about one college credit per week, typically, give yeah. or take. And then that's going to cost you anywhere from $500 to $1,000 per week if you want to just average out the costs. And like April said, that doesn't typically include transport to whatever the pickup location is. So like for you guys, do people have to get to Amache or do they have to get to Denver and then you guys drive them out there?
But they just have to get to Denver. So
Denver. Okay.
Once you get to Denver, we'll take you the rest of the way.
And that's pretty common. I had to get to Nairobi, yeah. Kenya, and they took me the rest of the way.
Right. Exactly. So normally there's a meetup place, and some field schools don't want you to have your own transport. Mm-hmm. Some field schools don't care. You know, and I think a lot of that, it's just really, really dependent on who's running the field school. I mean, this is the biggest thing that I've experienced is each director builds their field school partly based on the field school that they went on or the field mm-hmm. projects that they've been on. And so you kind of accumulate a knowledge and experience based, and you know, it's like any job when you're the boss, you think about every job you had where you were employed or working under someone, and you think about all the things that you liked, that you didn't like, what worked and what didn't work. And then you build your own, you know, you manage your own staff and your own people, and you build your field school in a way that fits what you liked and didn't like and the experiences you thought were successful. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of this interesting legacy of, well, this failed, so I'm never going to do it. so something my family's field school, we do something called cookie break. And at 10 o'clock every day or 9 or 10, depending on your start time, we stopped and we fed everybody cookies. And then we worked through till lunch. Nice. And so when I joined Bonnie Clark at the University of Denver and we started field school, I was like, there needs to be cookie break. Cookie break is key. And lo and behold, now there's cookie break.
Nice.
And, you know, it just makes sense because I don't know about you, but by like 9 or 10 every day, I'm ready for some second food. and especially when you're working really hard and doing a lot of physical labor, it just keeps people's energy up. And mm-hmm. so there's these legacy items that kind of you figure out work. Each field school is going to be so different. And I think that's my favorite thing about field schools. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is how different each one is.
Oh, yeah.
So you could go on 17 field schools. Like if this becomes your hobby, is going on field schools, you'll never have the same experience twice.
And that is a great segue into the final topic for today, which is some ways that you can go on field schools, especially if you're not affiliated with a university, you're not being exposed to, you know, sometimes universities hang up these posters and stuff from other places, and you can go on all these great field schools over the summer, but you might not be in that. You might just be a person who wants to do something over the summer rather than going on your average vacation. Maybe you want to go on a working vacation, but learn something and experience something and do something different. And that's kind of where Earthwatch comes in. I mentioned credit, college credit, like for the program I did at Earthwatch. But one thing you got to definitely keep in mind, and let me just go back to credit real quick, is if you are looking for college credit, before you go spend the money or even apply for this field school, find out whether or not your university will accept that credit because, you know, they may not. So if it's something you need, make sure you can get it and that they will, in fact, accept that credit from that field school because maybe they don't have some weird affiliation with that university or something is wrong. They don't meet their standards, whatever the case may be. Just make sure you can get that if that's something you actually need. If you don't need credit, then you're good to go. You can do whatever you want. But we'll have a links to all this stuff in the show notes. I'm going to throw these out here because we only have a few minutes left. And then we'll talk about them just briefly, but earthwatch.org, I believe. But again, look at the links in the show notes. The Institute for Field Research has a lot of stuff up there. The Maya Research Program, if you want to go work in Belize, they have a great program that's, I think the total length is 6 weeks, but they have it split up into 2 week chunks. So you can go to the first 2 weeks, look at their syllabus and say, I want to do these things, or the middle 2 weeks and say, I want to do these things, or the last 2 weeks, or you can go to the first 4 weeks, or the last 4 weeks, or the entire 6 weeks, and you'll pay accordingly. And it's actually pretty neat. Crow Canyon, which I'm going to get this wrong, is I think in the Four Corners area somewhere.
It's in Cortez, Colorado.
Cortez, I always forget that. Yeah, I knew it was, I thought it was Colorado. Okay. That's a great one if you want to go learn about stuff down there. And then Dig Ventures is something out of the UK, and that's a little bit different. You can go on some of the projects, but their stuff changes. It's really a crowdfunding site. You can support field schools and different archaeological projects through Dig Ventures. So check them out for that kind of thing. But this is just a short list that I put together. April, can you think of anything else that should be on this list where people can find field school type experiences that they can go to? I can't think of any others off the top of my head.
You know, most of the archaeological professional organizations maintain lists of field schools. If you go to the Society for Historic Archaeology webpage, they'll have a list. Society for American Archaeology, has a list. Mm-hmm. So most of our professional organizations maintain lists. And yeah. They're ones often that are, you know, they're verified. They're probably going to be pretty good field schools. So that's a great place to find them.
Yeah, the American Institute for Archaeology website as well, I think, has stuff listed like that where you can go. We'll have links to all these things on our show notes for this website, including Amache. I put that up there because they have a really cool, a lot of cool information from the school they do that April helps out with every other year.
Yeah, and we are now involved. We are now one of the field schools on the Institute for Field Research. So that's our full disclosure, is we are now part of that. And for the full disclosure, I was an intern at Crow Canyon. So
Nice.
Yep. Yeah. So that's actually a really fabulous program, especially they do a lot of targeted programs for things like seniors or high school students. And they do ones that are lab specific and field specific. But I'm slightly biased because I worked there. So
you've probably got more time at field schools than some early career archaeologists have in like their professional life.
I probably do. Yes.
Yeah.
You can just bounce around. It's great. I'm actually, this podcast is getting me incredibly excited for this summer when I get to be in the field again. So
there you go. All right. Well, thanks a lot, April. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to contact us. Our contact information is in the show notes. You can always contact me basically through all the ArcPodNet stuff, ArcPodNet on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you find us. You can go to the website and leave me a message that way. And we'll have everything on the show notes for our links, everything we've talked about today. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get April to do some recording at her field school this summer and, get some firsthand Amache experience from April. That'd be really fun. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot, April.
Anytime.
All right. And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show was produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song, I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.